Hey, everybody, this is Stelly Afti.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about how to create online courses for your startup.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
You know, many companies and many startups and you, Heaton, and your businesses and products and we at Close create, when you do content marketing, one part of your content marketing strategy might be to not just publish blog posts or videos, but to create courses, right? Online courses to teach your audience something specific. So we wanted to talk about how to think about online courses, what's happening there, how to do them right, how to do them wrong, and just share some of the tactics and the best practices that we've seen.
Yeah. So what's become a typical thing in almost every market is that in order to market, meaning like a SaaS product or e-commerce product or whatever, there's some kind of like opt-in, like give us your email and we'll give you something, whether it's a course, an ebook or something like that. So I'd say that like this is actually a really important topic because more and more people are doing it. And quite frankly, like a lot of other marketing tactics that are out there, people are not doing the best job of it. and they don't know how or why or they don't know any better.
So let's jump right into that. What are people doing wrong? What are startups doing wrong when it comes to the online courses that they are creating?
Yeah, I'm going to share my number one most controversial point that I learned kind of the hard way about this. And there's a caveat too. So number one thing is you might think that quantity wins, meaning you create more and more of these things, these ebooks or these courses. The truth is, if you've ever done that, you'll know that usually at most, one of them is really popular and gets you the best leads because you're doing them for lead generation.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Right.
So when you're doing these courses or ebooks, you know, because they're kind of muddy today, they're just opt-ins, right? You're opting into something and you're delivering value to people for free before they're ready to use your product or during the experience of them using your product is oftentimes what also happens. But I think we're talking more on the marketing side, right?
Yeah, this is more about marketing, yeah. Not making money or anything
cool.
like that.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
Seen all of it. because content is very very broad now. So I would say that like if you believe what I'm saying, then what you would want to do is before you even create the content, you would want to find the best piece of content you can create, the best opt-in, the best ebook, the best course, and all that. So I'll pause there. And try to get an idea of kind of what's in your mind about kind of that possibility.
Yes. So, you know, I agree and disagree with you. I think it really depends, right? So with, of course, I do think that you can, that the danger of doing a lot of quantity is that none of the courses you're creating are A, any good, or B, super attractive to creating a lot of leads, because these two things don't necessarily have to be the same, right? You could market a course on the outside well enough and it can be presented really strongly to sort of people want to give you their email, but then the course could be not that great, right? I don't think that's necessarily impossible to have like a shitty course that performs really well just as a lead magnet. And conversely, I could imagine you having a really amazing course that's not doing that great as a lead magnet. Now, obviously, if you can find the best of both, like you've created a course that is where you have a really easy time to market it effectively and people want that course so much that lots of people convert and give you the email. And then the course is really, really brilliant so that people will talk about it, they will share it, they will get a lot of value from it and come back and want more from you. Obviously, that's what you should be striving for. And with courses, honestly, like we, in like 4 years, we've only done two courses. No, that's not true. We've done three courses. Over 4 years, one is was the very first piece of content that we've ever done that was not a blog post, but it was based on a few of our blog posts, which was kind of a startup sales basic email course. That has been definitely the most successful course we've ever put together. Just an email course, like you sign up and you get multiple lessons over a specific period of time to kind of learn all the basics on how to do sales in a startup. And that's been a very, very successful course, very high level of engagement, lots and lots of opt-ins as a lead magnet. We've experimented with somebody creating a course based on our content on a, on a different platform for us. I could name it. I don't really care. This was a course that somebody put on Udemy for us. And it's all exclusively content that I created around negotiation. And that course, in terms of like its structure and all that, is okay, but it's not like the greatest thing ever. I don't absolutely love it. It has a lot of people that have, you know, quote unquote, taken the course, you know, thousands and thousands of people, but that hasn't really converted any business to us, or it really hasn't really done that much for us in the business. I mean, Udemy doesn't also allow you to really capture people's email and email them. You can ping them on the platform, but not really get their email. And the quality of people that participate on these courses is questionable, at least for our course. So this was just a shot in the dark that really hasn't done much. So in general, I agree with you that the quality, if I could only choose high quantity or high quality, I would always go with high quality. But the reason why I disagree a little bit, or why I'm not fully in agreement with you, is that we've done something very different with our ebook strategy, right? Which is something we might talk about a different day, where, you know, we are releasing a new ebook, you know, every 2 months this year. And that has been very successful for us. Yes, some ebooks have been more successful lead magnets than others, but these ebooks are very different in terms of being targeted towards specific and different user personas that we want to attract, right?
And that's where you went after my caveat. My caveat is, if you have user personas that you know are different, and you're very good at determining those, then the ebook strategy of more than one works really well. My guess is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, there's a lot of repetition between the ebooks, meaning like it might be one persona, but like certain percentage of the content is very similar.
That is, I want to say not true. Yeah, it's not as much as you would think, just because of the vastness of our content. And like we don't just make it persona focused, but it's very topical. So one ebook will be about sales hiring. The first ebook this year that we released was about sales hiring. Another ebook that we released together, right, as the Startup Chat ebook. And for people that don't have it, if you want it, just let us know, ping us, was the 0 to 1,000 customers. Yep. You know, and then the next one was the follow-up formula. These three ebooks have zero overlap in terms of content.
Sure. Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, if we were targeting everything to one persona, this would be much, much more difficult. And also, to be fair, I wouldn't say that every single, like, there is something to be said, and this is something we have not done a great job at. There's something to be said to go and look at what's a winner and really double down on that, right? So this is something that we could do a better job at, is like identifying something that really works well. And instead of just creating more, let's say, courses or ebooks or whatever, instead of creating more of that stuff, going back and saying, hey, we have a winner here. Let's extend it. Let's update it. Let's market it heavier. Let's promote it more. Versus just creating more and more stuff. And I think that we have not done a good job at like going back and finding these winners and really doubling down on them. We just recently have done this with blog posts, not even like books or courses or anything like that. Just starting to go back to some older posts of ours that are performing really well, or older posts of ours that we think are amazing but are not performing well, and spending real energy, time, and money to, you know, push them up. And we've seen some tremendous success with some of these posts that, like, they were old and good, but we thought they were outdated, and we just put a little bit more work in it. We updated, we did a little bit more promo work, and boom, like, they performed like crazy. So, yeah, doubling down on quality is for sure a big one. Now, in terms of courses, Heaton, you know, there's many ways to do this, right? You could create, it could be just an email course, right, where people get email lessons sent to them. There's platforms out there like Udemy or Teachable. That's a popular new one. You could have a course that's basically live and webinar-based, right, where people, maybe it's a course that people take 4 or 5 live webinar kind of sessions with you. Does it matter? Have you seen one thing being better than another? Have you had great experience? How much does form factor matter in terms of consumption, right? And what is the right type of person to even use a course for, right? When is a course better than a book, or better than a video, or better than, like, what is the uniqueness to a course that gives it certain strengths and weaknesses in your overall marketing strategy?
Yeah. So what we haven't talked about yet is actually process.
Hmm.
And And I think you can avoid a lot of mistakes if you actually follow a process. I know both of us like process. And so, for example, to answer the questions that you're proposing, in my opinion, I would take a very deliberate process. So what I would do is I would learn what topic is the most popular and how to frame that topic for my audience, whether it's a certain persona in my audience or all of them. Generally, when you're first starting out, you just pick all of them. And the ways to do that would be actually to run a lightweight marketing experiment. So if you have an email list, ask people what their biggest challenge is, oriented around the problem your product solves. That'll give you a very good idea of what their biggest challenge is. Well, guess what? Your content should be about their biggest challenge. Number two, if you don't have a big audience, like on an email list, thousands of people or whatever, then you can go do advertising, whether it's Google ads, Facebook ads, retargeting, or even just landing pages on your own site that, you know, with ads going to them, that can help you understand between five options of what you could do or 10 options. You use advertising to understand what gets the highest click-through rate. And that's just topic. I'm not even getting into like video or a course or an ebook yet. Because once you figure out the topic, then you can figure out the best way to deliver that to your audience. And it might be all those ways, to be honest. And you might be able to say, so for example, you know, I'll give a great example that's been really interesting and working well for me, which is, and I wrote about this earlier this year. So I have an email list. It's called, it's on producthabits.com. I have tens of thousands of people on the email list, and we asked them, what's your number one product challenge? And what we got down to was product prioritization. And so we started building a course around product prioritization. And this year we ran two runs of it, two workshops, online workshops on it. Now we can do an ebook on product prioritization. We can do all kinds of things on it. And in that one, there's no software attached to it yet. But that's a for a different podcast. But the learning that we had was that the number one challenge people have that we can solve is product prioritization. And that actually is the number one challenge when we dug in. And we did the same process to understand the process I just described, to understand what it is for how we should create content, what we should do. So honestly, ultimately, we're going to create a course on product prioritization and a bunch of software and stuff like that oriented around that problem as we've sort of discovered it this year and went after it and wanted to help people with it because that's what the audience really gravitated towards. And so my opinion and my process is very deliberate so that I don't make mistakes. Yeah. So as we discovered this problem, product prioritization, by just asking people the question, everything we're doing is all around that problem, whether it's an ebook, which we haven't done yet, or the courses that we're working on, or even software that we end up building will always be about solving that number one problem that we learned. And because of that, it is having a major impact on our audience. If we hadn't asked that question, just made it up, we actually wouldn't have picked product prioritization. We wouldn't have thought about it. In fact, when you look on the internet, no one's talking about that. But when you, and I mean it, nobody I've seen talk about that, but we learned that that's the number one problem people have when creating a product, iterating a product and building a business. And so that's how we discovered it. And what you know, really matters to me is not wasting any time. So we're not wasting any time building ideas like, oh, how do you get feedback from customers or all these other topics we could talk about and focusing on that and then putting it out there and learning it doesn't matter. Instead, we actually asked people, we learned first, and then we basically started building this stuff out. So that's an example of this process that I like to use. And if, again, if you don't have an email list, go use ads and go learn what's the number one problem based on the different ideas that you might have. Create an ad, create 10 ads. In fact, when we do this, we create like 20 or 30 ads and we target them at specific audiences to understand both what ads work the best, like what copy and what framing and what idea, what topic, as well as what audience resonates the most with it.
Now, let me ask you, so I love that, right? But now let me ask you, when you discover that product prioritization is a big topic, and I can't believe nobody had discovered that before, and it's even sounding great. Product prioritization is just like, it's great branding. But why did you make the decision to go down the course lane versus the book or video or blog post or whatever? There's many forms of content.
Yeah, we could do any of those, right? Honestly. The reason we specifically chose it in our case, and I'll give another example because ours won't be necessarily translatable to other folks, but we didn't have software at the time. And we wanted to monetize that business, and we knew how painful product prioritization was based on the responses we got. So we decided to do a workshop, which is essentially a course. And so we decided to do that because we wanted to monetize with a certain business model. That was just a sort of what's your product, what's your business model decision. So that's what I'm saying. It might not be as translatable. Now, if I'm running a software company, right, and I need to figure this out, what I would do is really think about the audience and exactly what's the best way for them to consume the content. Like, for example, you wrote a book on follow-up, right? Or a course. Is it an ebook or a course? It's an ebook, right?
It's an ebook, yeah.
Yeah. And that gives people a whole bunch of follow-up tactics and stuff like that. Now, you could have done a course and a video, but honestly, that would have been higher production value. That would have cost you more to do, I'm just assuming, than an ebook, because you already had a ton of content on the ebook. So to me, the smartest way, if you've done the first step, which is determine the problem that people have, the biggest challenge, the biggest, you know, the most likely topic that they're going to love that you can write about or create content on, I would just start with MVPs, minimum viable products, minimum viable content to solve that problem and start experimenting. Because what happens is, in your case, like, you've done a bunch of these ebooks now. I know your topics were pretty deliberate because you've done a bunch of blog posts and probably picked popular ones, right? I know we did when we did the one together. Mm-hmm. It was a popular podcast, mm-hmm. right? And so you have some idea of what people care about. Now, out of those, like you were saying, like, you would double down. So which one of those worked the best? My gut tells me follow-ups is probably really aligned with your business. That's just my gut.
Yeah.
So if that's true, then now you can double down and spend more effort, a little more effort, a little more money, and then see what the fruits of your labor are. The good news about you and how you would do it with software is there's an ROI. You know how many leads you got. You also know, you should know, you know, if your systems are right and you're using close.io and systems like that, that, like, this is where I got the customer from. Here's how much ROI I got. So if you got that customer as a lead from the ebook, then you can know the ROI and you can actually put dollars to it. And then you can figure out, like, whether you want to double down and start creating courses and stuff. Because on follow-up, I think there's a lot of room to create courses. I think there's a lot of room to do a lot of stuff. And I think, based on at least my own opinion, not validated, most people screw up at follow-up. But this is something I learned from you. And this is something where I don't even think I'm that good at it.
But you definitely got better at it. I couldn't agree with you more. Let's shift to wrap this episode up to one slightly different angle of doing courses that I see,
right,
that I see in the SaaS world, which is when you do courses to certificate, and either you certificate somebody on your software, like being an expert in using your tool or advising other people or consulting them or integrating things for them, or/and being an expert in a domain that your product is, like, dominant in. So, you know, a HubSpot could be certifying you as an inbound marketing specialist. Or, you know, in Close, we could maybe do a certification to make you an inbound sales expert or whatever, right? So you create these courses to offer a certification because, and the I assume the goal of these companies is they know that people, that certifications are something that is appealing to people because it sometimes offers
credibility
and job opportunities, right? And so people want these certifications, and then when they get them, they're really proud of them, they use them, and that kind of associates them with the overall brand. So it's kind of a different strategy to create branding and market dominance, but it's distinctly different from these courses as lead magnets to sell your software oftentimes. It's more like ecosystem strategy, right? Have you only seen really big brands in their space do this? Because I definitely know that Salesforce and HubSpot and some big brands in the SaaS space are offering certifications. I don't know that super young SaaS companies typically do this. So I'm just curious to hear that. But that's kind of another angle I see in the online course that SaaS companies use.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. I think it's pretty simple. If you're large enough, you have thousands of paying customers, probably usually in the 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, maybe a little bit earlier. A certification makes a ton of sense. You could do it earlier. Now, here's the thing. You talked about two separate types. One is the Salesforce example of you're a Salesforce expert. You're Salesforce certified. You know how to use their, you know, software. Or another approach is you're a sales specialist, and there's a sales specialist certificate of some kind. So in the scenario of your software, I think your software has to be either complicated enough, useful enough, where it requires some certification. Because that's like the software certification is a much more old school concept when it comes to like software being really complicated, right? Now, there might be other reasons, like your software integrates with a lot of tools and there's an ecosystem of providers around it, which is still old school, where you might want a software certification. So that's a good reason for that. Now, this whole specialist certification, I think it works the best when you can own that sort of, or you can start the trend of a certain type of expertise. Like inbound marketing, HubSpot, not even arguably, they created that trend, right? That's not arguable. Mm-hmm. They found it, they invented it, they doubled down on it. They used to be the inbound marketing company. Now I don't know what they are, but as they were the inbound marketing company, they were able to have, they could have really, and I think they did to some extent, double down on the certifications. What they did though is I think their primary certifications are for agencies. So agencies are inbound marketing certified through HubSpot or whatever as approved, you know, agency for inbound marketing. And they happen to use HubSpot software and that comes with the deal. So to me, like if you were to do it at close, I almost feel like the software angle would work better unless you can find an angle of certification you can own that's for a person.
Yeah.
And them really wanting that and them basically, honestly, their identity becoming that. Because the identity of these agencies are now inbound marketing agencies. And that's because of the way HubSpot did it. So I think there's like a big difference between the two. And that's something to really think really strongly and deeply about in your business and figuring out what stage to do it at. I think at your stage at close, like it might actually be a lot of credibility for someone to be a close expert or close.io expert, whatever way you guys say it. You know, by the way, I've never thought about your branding, but it's brilliant.
Well, I'll take that. I'll take that from you as a compliment. I can't believe that we've never talked about it.
No, we'll talk about branding like that soon. I think it's like just came to my mind. I'm like, close. Oh, yeah. I want to close deals. What's up? Anyways, it's good shit.
All right, brother. Well, I think that's it from us for this episode. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So shoot us an email, hnshaw@gmail.com, stelly@close.io, or tweet at us. If you have feedback, if you have ideas for episode, if you have questions, I think that's it from us for this episode.
Peace out.
Bye-bye.